Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tassel, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We're positively down here in Ocean City, Maryland. We're doing it all for the Maryland Lottery, our friends at Curio Wellness, as well as GBMC. We're out on the road doing our 27 favorite things to eat in 27 days. I actually have one of them back here right now. Odette Ramos is here from Baltimore City Council, and she said, What are you doing eating here? This coconut pie?
It looks amazing.
And I can't continue to eat it because I'll be spitting coconut at you, but this is the death by coconut. Death by coconut from the Ugly Pie at in Salisbury, Maryland. That's number 21 or 22 on the list. But I'm getting back to Baltimore to eat.
That's good.
You dragged me to a vegan crab cake at one point at my cousin John Shields' place. How are things? Good to see you down here again.
It's good to see you.
What do you counsel people do down here in regard to moving around? Because you're the third city councilwoman I've had on. But I had some of your cohorts on.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do lots of things here. We network with our colleagues from other parts of the state who be able to share ideas. We participate in sessions. I spoke at a diversity, equity, inclusion session yesterday.
Is such a thing still exists?
Yes. Yes.
I am wildly confused by a president who's at war with everyone who looks like us and every...
That's right. And so yesterday was a very interesting day here. I was able to speak with the diversity, equity, inclusion directors across the state, and they, you know, it was a good discussion around what are the things that they still want to be able to do and are still doing. And so we're a state that is, you know, not going to back down and going to continue to do what we are supposed to do to comply and to with our values, you know, not necessarily with what's his name, but with our values as a state. So it was a good discussion. There's been three diversity, equity, inclusion sessions here at MACO. So there was the diversity caucus, there was a session Wednesday, and then yesterday's session. So that's good that the conference is really having those kinds of discussions. Yesterday also, though, the Baltimore ICE director was here and at a session talking about...
Threatening you in any way?
Well, I confronted her directly. Mm-hmm. And it was they didn't have their agents here to come and get all the Latinos.
What does confront mean? I hear all these attack, confront... Dude, you're putting people like my brother in a cage and throwing them on.
Exactly. That's basically what I said to her.
I'm not down with that.
So there was a session about immigration, and it was very, very one-sided.
One-sided from them? From the federal side or the states?
I mean, the Maryland Association of Counties, which I am in leadership, I'm in the legislative committee. I'm not on the board. But I invited the ICE director, the warden from Harford County Jail, one of the legislators, and the National Association of Counties for a panel on, you know, clearing the air is what they called it, on immigration. But it was very one-sided as to what ICE is doing and what they are. It didn't even say what we can and can't do. We didn't even talk about that. There was nobody from the side saying, here's what you can do to protect your residents, which was very frustrating. I was in the front row. I got to ask the first question, and my question wasn't a question. It was really just pinning her on the fact that the ICE agents are racial profiling because all they're doing is roaming around the streets looking for Latinos, looking for brown people, assuming that each of us are here, you know, and that shouldn't be here, separating families. You know, it's really been very, very frustrating. So I talked for about 10 minutes about what, you know, and she didn't answer any questions. She deflected. I had some of my other Latino electeds talk. MACO, I think, did. You know, I think this is a great organization, but they did a really poor job on that session. And so... you know, we will continue to fight and protect our immigrant community and our Latino community. Because what he's trying to do is just really go after anybody that's not white. And that's what's happening. And I told her that.
Well, here's what I mean, all the budgeting and big, beautiful bill. I had Johnny O on. We'll talk to Chris Van Hollen later.
Yeah.
But Who are these people working for ICE, and what are their qualifications to be putting masks on without any identification to round people into unmarked vans?
Well, and that's basically
a Gestapo. That's an SS. That's not an American.
And she lied
concept.
About that. I mean, the director, Director Baker, lied about that because she said there's no law saying that they can't wear masks, so they're all going to wear a mask, which is just horrible.
Well, let's pass a law.
And that's the state is going to be working on that because locals can't do it. We just don't have the authority. But she was also talking about how they're also all have body cameras and they're all identified, and we just said it's a lie. It was really frustrating. I'm glad we were able to have the discussion, but if it was about legislation, that's not what happened. So, we came together as Latino elected officials. We've been very clear about how to conduct business, moving forward, and that should have been a session that we could actually have a discussion and not necessarily have just one side presented. And, we're here to protect our residents, and the greatest strength of our state and of our city is our diversity and the people that are here and that make it great. And, to be able to start eliminating a whole section of the population just because of how they look and what language they speak is just abhorrent. It's just horrible.
It's un-American.
That's right.
It's un-Christian. It's unkind. It's indecent. It's indecent. It's.
I mean, I'm glad I got a chance to confront her. I'm shocked that I'm not in jail right now. we have to keep. We will continue to keep fighting. And we will have whatever it takes. Our Know Your Rights trainings, our bystander trainings, our
what exactly
legal
did
support.
You say to her in this? How many people were in the room at this?
It was
point?
About 150 people
right.
in the room.
There's no video. This is just work.
Somebody took a video. There's
okay.
a video somewhere.
Right. Yeah, okay. I just want to know what you said, because I'm wondering if that ICE person came over to me right now. Whatever you said, I'd be uglier. I'd work more blue. Yeah, I just would.
Well, so
I work more blue on the air.
Well,
I mean,
I didn't curse.
I'm raging about
I
this
didn't,
issue.
I didn't curse. Okay. But I did say that, this is, and I also pleaded to her as a mom. That I think she's a mom. I don't know, but and as somebody who should have a conscience, I asked her to please stop this and to resist doing this because it is just un-American, unconscionable, and I get that she's just trying to do her job, but this is not the way. This is not the way. They never said anything about going after criminals. They literally said, we're going after people who don't have status. Well, then they're taking away all of the legal statuses from everybody in order to then pick people out. But they're not even, they're going over after Americans. I mean, I carry my birth certificate with me. So it's like, it's a really, really horrible, horrible thing. So I went on and on about a lot of different things. And the mask issue,
what would my rights be right now if I got picked up out in front of the Plym Plaza by ICE here? What would, literally, thrown into a van, taken off, I'm American, no you're not, F you get. I mean, I've seen the videos of
right.
everything.
So
that's
what would
going
happen
on.
Is that you would be
kids out walking his dog and they let his dog die.
What would
traffic,
happen is
you know?
That you would be detained. You would be detained and you would have to wait until you have a trial, right? It's not like you get released and then you come back. You would have to wait. So the conditions
so
that are
they
at
arrest
the
me, I don't even have a call to a lawyer.
You can call a lawyer. You can call family, but you will not be released. You will not be released
when
until you have a trial.
When they pick up a 16, 17-year-old kid in Los Angeles and he goes into a van, what? Chris Van Hollen, all the electeds, Kwesi went down. They wouldn't even let you. Were you there that day? They wouldn't even let anybody in, right?
I know. I wasn't there with them, but I was there with when the senator.
In Baltimore, right? Yep.
When the senator went to El Salvador the first time, the electeds came together to welcome him back, but also to rally in support of what he was trying to do. In that particular case, they just took Kilmar and then they sent him away. There weren't the due process rights. Since that time, when the senator has been calling for due process rights, they at least detained. Well, you have to be detained, then you get a hearing, and then you're sent away. So it's there's a pastor from the Eastern Shore who has done nothing. He's been an upstanding He's been an upstanding resident for a really long time in the Eastern Shore. He's got a family, been contributing to the community, huge congregation. They picked him up. Like, what is going on here? And so we're just going to continue the battle. And if we have to continue it here, we have to continue it here.
What do you think of the D.C. thing? Because the whole idea of them not having a governor, that not having representation in that way makes it.
Yeah,
DC. I mean, if I'm a DC resident right now, yeah. There's a whole different level of concern I would have for what my rights would be when Donald Trump is looking to usurp my rights.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no middle ground of mm-hmm. getting picked up on the streets in DC.
Yeah.
Where what happens then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you saw somebody threw a sandwich at one of the guys and is now being charged with a felony. So he is going to try to do some martial law stuff there. And I think that residents are organizing to resist, which is the right thing to do. Mayor Bowser is doing exactly what she can. They've just got, D.C. is just this unfortunately weird status where the federal government has a lot more say. Now, if they came into Baltimore, first of all, they're not going to go very far, right? Because this is Baltimore City. We defend our city to the max. And so it'll be very interesting to see what happens if they do come into the city. But we're prepared if they do. We've got a great legal team. We have.
He should keep our city out of his mouth.
He needs to. Especially since everything that we're doing is going in the right direction. And he is just, you know, telling lies about our city. So anyway, I think D.C. is in a tough spot. But, you know, we have their back, whatever Mayor Bowser needs, whatever the residents need. I think that, you know, as residents of, you know, we're not in D.C., but, you know, very close. I think it's very important that we come together. So, yeah, it's a lot. And this is unfortunate because this whole issue around our residents and ICE, it's really a horrible issue. But we also still have to still do the day-to-day business of city government, too.
Well, that's why when you sat down, I didn't know we were going into the ICE lane to get me all fired up. But Deb Ramos is here, councilwoman from Baltimore City, representing. When I say districts, I had Mark on. I said District 4. I'm like, okay, that's north. So I go district by district. But you're basically, you know, Johns Hopkins area, center of the city. I'm trying to get your borders.
Sort of. I mean, I'm got sort of north central, so from basically Falls Road to Clifton Park. So I've got Johns Hopkins and Remington and Hamden, but I also have great neighborhoods like Ednor Gardens, Lake Montebello.
Why are you at Montebello? You're that far east.
Oh, yeah. I have Lake Montebello.
So you're not to Coco's, though. No, that's Ryan. Yeah. So like,
I have parts of Morgan State University. I have, you know, so my district is.
You have the
diverse.
Y at Memorial Stadium.
I sure do.
There you go.
Right. So,
hi, John.
it's a great district. Also, being the first Hispanic Latina elected official in Baltimore City, I also answer to and want to give voice to a whole citywide contingent, you know, of our community and. Of our Latino community. So
I'm the only Latino FCC owner in the history of the state. I'm the only Latino host that's been on the radio 35 years.
Still the first and only.
And people, you know, I thought I was white for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not white.
No.
I'm just not. Yeah. I mean, I'm just not. I thought I could sort of fit in and be white, but I'm not white.
Yeah, no, I can't do it either.
I'm just not. I mean, it's not because I don't want to be white. It's because I'm not. You know, it's just I was raised in that way, and really the last 10 years have shown me this animus of racism that has been below the surface in a way that I have not fully respected since Archie Bunker. I mean, like literally.
No, I mean, it's. I think these are times where we all want to be very proud of who we are and want to make sure that people know who we are.
This guy threw toilet paper to your people.
Oh, I know. It was horrible. We were in Puerto Rico recently and
it was like a Saturday Night Live skit, except it was real.
This great mural of that situation right in the middle of the city and, you know, with political commentary on it. And so it's... You know, our act of resistance in terms of Baltimore City is obviously getting involved with all the rallies and anything that we can do. But also, you know, because what's-his-name, you know, continues to think that we're doing something terrible, you know, our city is actually, you know, we double down on how amazing our diversity is. You can love whoever you want to love in our city. We're going to protect our immigrants. And so making sure that we're doubling down on being involved with our city and making it the example of how every other city can be successful by celebrating our diversity.
Well give me the postcard or that on, because I'm trying to get Brandon over here and I haven't, he's doing what he's doing. what has changed since you and I did this together 5 years ago with the murder, just the murder rate alone, not car.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw Ivan Bates talking about young people and problems and holding parents accountable. I'm good for that. But what has fundamentally changed that someone in Bel Air, Westminster, or Hereford who says, I ain't going back to the city and like all of that, and even thinking we're faking the numbers of murder, you know, like, oh, they're not reporting the crime. I was in a place the other day. They're not reporting crime in Towson. There's a lot more crime in Towson than they're reporting. And I'm like, shit, you people believe. I don't know. Like, there's
it's ridiculous. I mean, I think some of what we're seeing in terms of attacks on our city is blatant racism because he is a black mayor. But Mayor Scott has done a great job on reducing the homicide rate and crime, not through policing. Okay, we have really done a great job of investing in alternative solutions, like the group violence reduction strategy, where you basically figure out which groups are doing the violence. We're going to them and saying, okay, man, you got a choice. We'll put you in jail, or we can give you all of the resources you need to get out of that life. Okay, housing, job, opportunities. We will give that to you, with the promise that you will not be in this life anymore. And people are taking that up and actually doing it. And the violence interrupters at Safe Streets, it's absolutely working, because a lot of the murder rate was really about interpersonal conflict. So it's about teaching people you can have a conflict, but you don't have to shoot each other for it. So
these were not random. Random acts of violence are carjackings and to strangers. These murders were not
very much interpersonal, they were, for the most part.
And they were targeted, and they were vengeance-related.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So I think we've done a good job. You know, we're still got work to do, right? I mean, it's not perfect.
Well, there's a lot of guns.
I had a quadruple shooting in my district in March. So we do have some. But, I mean, I think in general, we're moving in the right direction. Everybody's moving in this direction to really think through how we can do this differently to get to the root causes of why even people are in this, you know, in this situation. So that's what, it was very intentional. It wasn't accidental, like it was a trend. This was very intentional work that we've done. And so, you know, I credit the mayor for his vision on that. And,
did you believe in that from the beginning? Were there parts
of
the
city? I was
like,
always a big fan.
We
got to
do something, is what I, you know.
No, I was always a big fan. I was on the public safety committee last term, and I know that we had a lot of these discussions, and there wasn't always belief that it would work. But I've always been a big fan of this approach. And it's definitely working. Now, you know, there's still a lot more work to do. We, you know, obviously with the death of the three firefighters in 2022, that really sparked more emphasis around addressing vacant and abandoned properties, even though there were those of us who had been yelling about it for about 30 years and coming up with policies about how to address it. But
I think of you,
know,
as the housing person.
Yeah, no, I appreciate
it. I do.
I think housing is really the basis for everything. I mean, you can't be healthy unless you have housing. You can't, we saw with the overdose thing a few weeks ago that we had to search all these vacant properties to make sure nobody was in there overdosing. We had, you know, those health issues. I mean, we've got to address this problem. And so at least that there's, you know, the governor's behind the strategy, the mayor's been putting more money to it. I don't always agree with how the approach is going, but I'm part of that work, getting the right tools in place. So we're making progress there for sure. We're going in the right direction. And at least everybody's got the same goal. You know, we're trying to reduce the number of vacant and abandoned properties, not by just leveling the entire city. Why would we do that? I mean, nobody makes houses like that anymore. They're still standing, even though they're falling apart, because the bones are really good. So let's rehab them so we can get more families in there. And that's what we want to do.
What do you hear about rehabbing these homes? How many of these homes have lead paint, asbestos? Like,
sure, but a lot of them are sick buildings, no question. So it is expensive, but it is so worth it to have such an amazing, amazing house at the end.
My wife and I, for the first time last week, she went down Lombard and saw the community college just gone. Uh-huh. Next to the Holocaust park, right? And she looked at it and I said, this is what Detroit looked like when they came in and started sort of like greening it a little bit. It's just a whole block of grass. And that's probably a whole lot better than a block of blight.
It
but
is true,
somewhere but
not
in between. Well, that's why I was asking you. what blight or what I would look at and say, oh, yeah, that place is falling apart.
Yeah, but
and that
you know
place
what?
Probably has not just rats, but just maybe it should be raised and reconstructed, but I'm not in that world, and certainly not in that world where you are, where there's blocks and blocks and blocks. And say, we can't knock them all down, right? But you've got soup to nuts stories, successes, and probably failures in both lines of work to say, well, that one we did a good job. That one's still in progress. That's an empty lot. But I think the blight itself, taking that away, is its own broken window thing for me. You know, just driving and seeing grass. That building wasn't falling apart. The community college building didn't look like.
Maybe
it was on the inside. Yeah, obviously it was. But that wasn't a city blight, but it is now a city park. So.
Yeah. Well, I actually don't use the word blight. I think everything that we're seeing is actually opportunity. It's an opportunity for a family to be in that house, whether it's a brand new construction or it's, you know, rehabbing that house. That it's an opportunity.
But do we know the difference between things that need to be torn down and things
sure.
that can't be
no,
rehabbed?
We've been working on... The DHCD has a roof study, so they did initially a roof study to see what's actually, you know, unsafe, and so we took a few houses down as a result. So, but we're not going to take everything down. I mean, we have a block in my district, the 1600 block of Gorsuch. It's such beautiful homes, all of them vacant.
We have a lot of that in Baltimore.
And we foreclosed on most of them through the INREM, I-N-R-E-M process that I helped to bring to Baltimore, where when the liens get higher than the value of the property, the assessed value, the city can foreclose. So that was our test block. We acquired the whole thing. And instead of demolishing the whole thing, because those are beautiful houses, we have a developer from the community that's doing house by house. There's a couple of them that were owned by private owners that they actually rehab the houses. So we're going to have a whole new block of families there. And it's going to rejuvenate everything on the rest of the street and with all of the other work being done in that neighborhood. I mean, we can do it. We've got the tools. And I've introduced recently another bill to expand the NREM process. And we've got, you know, some other things lined up. So, you know, it's not about just mowing our entire city down. It's about making sure that we're doing it strategically, but also that we put in the dollars to make sure that these houses, and there's a new homeowner there on that block, and she knows the promise of the rest of the block, and she is really happy with that rehab, and she's working with the community on the rest of the block. I mean, it's great. So this work is hard because it's block by block and house by house, right? But if we do a whole block around the same time, you really see that impact, and it makes a big difference. So we're going to continue to do it that way. The NREM process has been super lightning fast. I mean, it used to take 2 years to acquire a property. Now it's taking 6 months, and that's
what's
a big
NREM?
Deal. NREM is the it's Latin for the thing, and it's basically when the unpaid taxes get higher than the assessed value of the property, the city can take it to foreclosure. And we have a dedicated docket in the circuit court so that there's all these cases are going through. It's designed to be quick and extinguish the liens at the end of the process so that the city can take possession and then work on figuring out the next steps for that house. And
it becomes a city asset, literally, right?
It does, okay. And that way, we don't have to auction it off to another owner. We can, unlike other processes that we have, we can keep that whole block and then work, you know, with the community on the outcome that they want to see, and with the goals that we need for our city. We want to grow our city's population, but we need housing to do it, right?
Sure.
I mean,
and
we
jobs and transportation.
We need everything,
that, yeah.
You know, but housing is part of it. Like, we talk about bringing people in, but we need the housing. People actually want to move into Baltimore, but despite what Fox News says, people want to move here, and we need to make sure that we have the inventory.
I have Megan McCorkle, and she tells me that all the time.
Yeah.
Odette Ramos is here. She's councilwoman. My time is short. I had Zach by yesterday, and we were talking about sort of that big hall where the mechanic is and the tax situation in these big holes in the ground where Mr. Big owns something and just says, I'm not dealing with it. I'll pay the 10 cents in taxes.
Yeah.
Let it be. I'll use the word blight. You don't like it, but let it be a hole in the ground. You know, I don't care. I'm Mr. Big, or it's just not at the top of my list of things to deal with as a company. Harbor Place became that for that bankrupt company from out of town, right? So what's being done tax-wise for that to make sure that holes are good? Because Zach explained it to me, but I wanted to ask you a little bit more about it.
Sure. So we currently, we passed a bill last term that adds a tax to vacant buildings. And so that we would tax vacant buildings three and then again four times the tax rate so that it would be an incentive for somebody to do something with it. Nobody's going to pay it, but it does get houses up to be able to be eligible for in rem so that we can foreclose. So I have a bill coming that Councilman Blanchard helped me with to add the vacancy tax to vacant lots. And so that's what we're doing, is we're adding the tax to vacant lots. So the vacant lots, it's coming out on Monday, the legislation, will be taxed four times the tax rate. And again, the idea is...
We're going to punish you to some degree if you're not...
Yeah,
gonna,
I mean, if you're not doing anything with
you're not
it,
contributing
you
to
need
our city,
to
right?
do, you need to pay this tax. Now, again, this is... I don't expect that we're going to get revenue from this. But what I really want to do is to pressure either people to do something, you know, because you can use the tax code to change behavior. So that's part of it. But also, if they're not, then that we can foreclose. We can either do in rem, what I call in rem one, which is what I explained to you. I have another bill that we just introduced to add the foreclosure process to when properties have the, and they're blight, excuse me, they're vacant, vacant lots or vacant properties. When the liens are below the value of the property, we can still foreclose. So we're going to put all those tools in place to be able to do what we need to do strategically. The mechanic is a tough one, and I know that's something that Councilman Blanchard really wants to work on. So we're the vacancy tax that we're about to introduce will help in that regard. He's also interested in what's called a split value tax or a land value tax, where you could sort of flip the script on, you know, taxing land more than you tax properties. Jury's still out on how that's all going to work, if it works. The General Assembly needs to take action for us to even have authority to do it. But we're using the authority that the General Assembly already gave us to be able to add these taxes. We may go up to, you know, 10%, 10 times more than the tax rate at some point, but we're going to start with this four.
Anything else you're excited about? We've done a lot of complaining and fixing problems here. Is there any PR you want to do, Odette?
Actually, yes. I am so grateful to be in Baltimore and be a part of the solution in Baltimore, but also to represent my district. I represent 18 bookstores. And so the mayor's office agreed 2 years ago to move the Baltimore Book Festival to Waverly.
Oh, that's right.
And
we talked about this
before. Baltimore
okay.
Book Festival is coming up September 12th, 13th, and 14th. Same footprint as last year. So on 30th in front of Peabody Heights, 31st Street in front of Normal's bookstore, and 32nd Street in front of Red Emma's, along with the market and everything in between.
This is the smile of a four-time author of books. So.
Yes. Like, no, so, well, you know, we're a city that loves books. We produce amazing writers. We produce amazing art, obviously. So I'm just so happy to host the Baltimore Book Festival, and I want everybody to come. It will be a great 3 days of...
What's the days? We got dates on this?
Yeah, September 12th, 13th, and 14th.
I'm in town. Okay, good.
So,
that's good.
Yeah, there'll be author talks at each of the bookstores. There will be vendors. There will be City Lit Project is also a partner, so they're going to have a tent, and Red Emma's has a tent, and then we'll have a children's tent, and it's really going to be great. It was great last year. We're perfecting how the layout looks in Waverly. I want everybody to come out and enjoy, learn about some local authors and some national authors. There'll be workshops on writing. There'll be poetry readings. There'll be, you know, everything in between. And we also have the book thing will be open that weekend, so you can pick up some books. We can drop off some books over to the book thing that you've already finished reading. So it will be really great. So we hope everybody comes to Waverly for the book festival.
Well, as two Latinos here, one of us actually bilingual, I want to tell you my book story that I knew that the country was falling apart. You ready? Mm-hmm. And it happened about 12 blocks away from here,
okay,
from where we're sitting.
Okay.
2013, Ravens win a Super Bowl.
Right.
In February, and I took 100 days and stopped. I didn't watch any hockey. I didn't talk to my wife. I didn't go to concerts. I wrote Purple Rain 2, mm-hmm, and I labored hard to have it ready to go for Father's Day, which is in June, to be delivered.
Yeah.
And Father's Day week, always, second week of June, the Ravens have their convention down here. So I had Brian Billick. I had books behind me, stacks and boxes of books in a thing like this. I paid the Ravens Roost people $500 for like a table at the convention. They had a castle in the sand, 28th Street. So we're on 11 blocks away. So I'm there, and I got my book out. And my book ain't got no pictures. It was all words, lots of words. And it's about this big, and it was 400 and some pages. And it's, there were 15,000 Ravens fans. Mm-hmm. Hardcore, paint your basement purple. Mm-hmm. I wrote a book, third person, telling all of the stories in their words of the most significant thing that ever happened to Ravens fans. These people all are spending $1,000, $2,000 to be down here. They walked by. They looked at my book. They did not balk at the $20 price. Mm-hmm. They balked at the fact that it was a book. And I cannot tell you how many people. I think I sold 40 books. I don't even think I made the $500 back. But I sat there all day. And the thing that I remember about that day, so we're talking early, middle of the summer 13. I don't read new books. I don't read new books. I ain't read new books. I didn't read books in high school. And I thought, this is how Donald Trump gets elected. Mm. We don't read new books. Mm-hmm. So that's my, it's been 12 and a half years ago now that I felt like the world was coming to an end when there's this proud auteur. You know, sitting there at my own little book festival for nothing but Ravens fans writing a Ravens book, I found out that 99% of the population there hasn't read a book in so long that a book fair and a book festival is so necessary in this country.
Yeah, it really is, especially that, you know, people are getting, like, the audiobooks and all of that, and that's all fine. It's all fine. But
AI,
like,
baby.
But, you know, there's nothing like, you know, reading an actual book. And so Baltimore is still the place to do that. And the Baltimore Book Festival, District 14, Waverly, September 12th through the 14th.
Secretary of Labor's around the corner. She snuck
she's
over.
She's waiting
I
for you.
Yeah, I couldn't see you, and I had my reading glasses on. Odette Ramos, I got here. I love you, Odette. How's John? Good?
Everybody's good.
I've known
thank
her husband
you.
Longer than her. All right. Thank you for your service. I always say that. Like,
thanks
you're out on the
for
front
the opportunity.
Lines. And if I couldn't get into the face of the ice woman yesterday, God bless you for
being
Latin. That's all I'm going to say. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Taos in Baltimore. Back from the beach. We're going to have labor. I'm not in labor, but I'm a part of labor. I'm laboring.
It's a different labor.
Different kind of labor. Stay with us.